when I first commissioned this film, when I rang you up and said, could you do a work for word of pictures and noises, you've come up with something that includes no types of music as we might expect to hear it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, music for me at the moment involves tape recorders and the voice, and probably the musical section of the film as such is the section inside the enclosure where all the voices get mixed up and distorted in various ways. That for me is musical procedure.
What I want to get towards is why the film is the way it is. Why, for instance, is it called Run, apart from the obvious that it's about somebody running about?
Yeah.
But why a run?
Yeah.
Where are we going to, and what are you heading towards? What's the line of the film?
Well, I think Run is coming to have more meaning for me as we make the film. And it really, when you see the word run, it's out of context, and it immediately makes you think about the function of the word run. In other words, it's being made to function in ways other than the normal way. And I think that stands for the sort of things that are happening to everything else in the film. We're looking at situations, objects, sounds, attitudes, from points of view other than the ones we take for granted.
There's a sort of a constant change going on during the work. What sort of change? What's the basis for this? What sort of changes are you interested in? You've talked before of reality and non-reality,
or
sanity and madness.
Yeah.
What's the background ideas lying behind? Are these the sort of changes you're talking about in the film?
I'm not sure. I don't sort of say immediately yes to those statements because they don't exactly describe it. In fact, it's quite clear to me, and it must be clear to you, that I can't describe exactly what the film is about and what these things that I feel should go together are going together for, except to say that they reflect a feeling inside me which they equate with a feeling inside me. And that's why I think they should be put together. One of the things that has occurred to me quite very strongly since we started the film making it is a very strong theme, and that is the fact that I felt for a long time that it's a wrong idea to categorize various activities as being sort of separate, you know, or one does this, or one does that, or one does that. And one of the things I think the film can say very clearly is that all of the activities that are seemingly disjointed, juxtaposed activities that are present, and sounds and everything else, and situations, are all part and parcel of the experience of the person. And they all, in the end, focus on the one point.
What's that point?
That point is what the person really is, his sort of essence, the part of himself which he never going to be able to explain in words it's the crying laughing part of the person.
What sort of things govern what that is? In other words, what sort of things govern what you are?
Yeah. It's bloody presumptuous to even try and pick out what they are, but obviously I've got some ideas. There are two elements. One is all the stimuli that I've experienced, that is, situation stimuli, people stimuli, ideas stimuli. And the other thing, of course, is the way in which I interpret those stimuli. And those two things put together produce that area in me which is reachable only by setting up a situation which which one feels intuitively equates with the result of the stimuli in my interpretation. You see, what I'm doing at the moment is using words to try to equate with that very same area. I'm just doing another operation exactly equivalent to making the film right now, only in a more restrictive way. And that's why in the end any specific communication beyond a very limited level is not going to occur. It's going to occur for me because when I just said those things, I felt, yes, 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 that's right. That's, I feel good about that. And then I immediately knew that that didn't necessarily mean that you would feel good or even feel anything similar.
Could you, I'd like to try and sort of pull together some of the elements, like blocks and rods, for instance.
Yeah, right.
In your stage performances, in some of the presentations that I've seen of yours, you use blocks and rods and bounded environments quite extensively. What do they represent for you?
Well, again, I used to find explaining what they represented pretty easy. And it seems I find explaining them more and more difficult.
What did you say then to explain them?
I said that the blocks and rods represented limitations and prescriptions on the way in which one felt and the way in which one interpreted and acted as a person encased in a whole system which made up the circumstances of one's existence. And so the blocks and rods, if you like, were analogies for the stimuli of people and environments and ideas. And which one was enmeshed?
You use these words like prescriptions and enmeshed and things.
Yeah.
Are you saying that we're immutably sort of stuck where we are?
I think we're immutably stuck where we are individually stuck.
Explain that. Could you start from scratch if nobody had ever heard that in the previous conversation?
Yeah.
And talk to me about where we are and why.
Yeah. Quite simply, we are what we imagine ourselves to be, fundamentally. I mean, the only way we can get any real objective consciousness of ourselves is through thought, and we think in words. Now there's the limitation straight away. Our real awareness of ourselves and sort of faith in the fact that we actually exist beyond our physical existence, I'm not talking about that, I'm talking about our identity as a person, is a straight sort of a primitive faith. It's got nothing to do with rationalizing at all. And it seems to me that many of the objects around us which don't have our ability of discourse and language don't have our imagination are somehow more not concrete, more secure in their existence because they have no means of questioning their existence. They just are, sort of immutably so.
Is that what you want to be? Immutably what you want to be? No question?
No, not at all. What I'm interested in doing is in investigating the nature of what I am. Meaning the nature of my being. Because I think it's extremely interesting in almost a completely abstract kind of way. I just think it's a fascinating sort of situation. I'm not interested in it to better myself or make myself deeper or broader. I'm just hypnotized like I'm hypnotized by other things, like James Bond movies or something, you know. Or war films, or something. Things. I mean, everything that hypnotizes me obviously has got something to tell me. If I ask the question, "Why am I hypnotized?" Rocks and geographical stratas and things like that don't ask themselves those questions. And that's why they fascinate me. And especially why I'm fascinated with my very transient nature, my identity and my awareness of my identity with those things. So that maybe there are two elements. There's all of the stimuli I've been talking about and how they affect me, all of my activities. Why do I do them? It's got something to do with my identity, with what I am. Everything that I do and everything that I think and feel has got something to do with that. Sort of going the full circle from all the things that are into me, interpreted by me, and then out again to the things that are. And following that circle is important.
The you seem to place a lot of emphasis in the stream of consciousness sort of material that I've heard you record for your various stage thing.
Mm-hmm.
With the past, with your family, with your parents, and for generations back as far as you can see them. Why is that? What's the significance of that for you?
I haven't thought it right through at all. I just sort of give you half-baked ideas. One is, since I came back from overseas, only really since then, I had a strong conviction about the fact that I'm a culmination of these other generations, you know, that they are contributory factors, even although I've never had any physical confrontation with them.
Mm.
In other words, it's come down through the blood. And, of course, that can broaden out to not just the blood that's in my ancestors, but and all of the human beings that have been before me. I think I feel that. I'm not sure whether I'm just saying it. I'm not sure. But I think I feel that pretty strongly. And it's a new feeling to me because I didn't have it quite recently.
You feel the sum of the influences in that broader sense?
Yes, I think so. I think that's one of the things which makes me take second looks and third looks at the sorts of things I was saying before, the stimuli and the situations and the circumstances.
What would you define as your trade?
I like the word trade. Somebody who... I define my trade as someone who's trying to be aware of the sorts of things that he's doing anyway, which everyone else is doing, but which they perhaps don't look at as closely as myself. Self-awareness and all those things, all those words that describe really what I've said, I don't mean that. It's got something to do with direct investigation of myself and in the non-categorizable area.
Do you think there is profit for humans to examine themselves in the way that you're doing?
As a generalization, I would say I don't know. I would say that the generalization itself is a bad one. It depends on the person. It depends on everything about the person, whether they can take it or whether they can't, whether they do or whether they don't is the answer. I think.
Is there profit for you?
Oh, I don't know whether there's profit. What do you mean by profit?
It's just there, and you're in.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a prisoner of it. That's what I do. And again, it sounds like a trite gimmick, you know, I have no choice, all that.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a way of describing it. I think I don't have any choice. I've always gone along positively along the line which I couldn't help going along anyway.
Yeah. I wanted to discover something of your impressions of... I wanted to discover something of your impressions of the levels of the head, as it were.
Mm.
In your opinion, are most people aware of what is what's in their minds and or what their minds are capable of?
My first reaction is to say no.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. But of course, I don't know. I just don't know. I know in my own case that I'm aware of the fact that I'm so unaware of just how many levels there are. Of course, they're an infinite number. And it's a shock, the realization that the objects are juxtaposed in a way which is nonsensical in the other reality becomes a tremendous shock, you know? And so you feel that you've changed. All that's happened is that your point of view is altered. They've got things have another meaning, another hierarchy of sort of vibrations from them.
Is this what we hear of as something akin to the drug experience? Is this the sort of other reality you're talking about?
I don't know.
Altered perception.
I haven't got a clue, Bruce. I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all.
Yeah.
My limited experience with drugs is certainly, I would say, no, it's nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
Certainly, it may have some similarities while you're in the experience itself, but in retrospect, there's no one feels completely different about the two things. I feel not very serious about my drug experiences at all. For some reason or other, they don't concern me seriously. I don't know why. They just don't.
Yeah.
Maybe because they were very strong. But the other things do, because maybe it's just, you know, sort of a silly reason that they weren't drug experiences. They were just, in other words, my state wasn't changed by anything except myself.
What was this? It's hard to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, bloody hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
When
you talk of another reality,
it's
hard to know what you mean. What sort, what time, when, how long, those sort of questions.
Yeah. But...
what could you tell us about
it? Yeah, well, by another reality, I mean specifically the environment of the blocks and rods.
Yeah.
That's one example. That's the first environment where my first experiences like this occurred, where the results of a sort of concentration which I'd never been able to achieve before, but which many people do achieve, first occurred. In other words, you know, a compression of the time scale. Everything... short periods of time to me, actually in virtual time, were very long. That happens to lots of people when they get concentrating on something. That's exactly what happens. They don't notice the time going past. As well as that, there's within this blocks and rod thing, I experienced direct sensual feelings, which I'd never experienced before. Maybe other people have experienced them just normally. Maybe I was deprived. I think perhaps I might have been. But in that blocks and rod structure and changing the structure and being in it and personalizing the planes and the lines and the three-dimensional spatial characteristics that were delineated by these blocks and rods... reinforcing the changes in my imagination with my body. I found, for example, I could do things, make my body do things which I could never make it do in any other situation. I think what I'm really saying is that I learned how to concentrate in that kind of environment. I realise now that I never knew how to concentrate before that. And being able to concentrate enabled my imagination to focus. Could never focus before. I don't even think it even reached the surface before. And it just sort of busted out of the sort of surface of the of my ordinary existence before that, and just zapped in on these abstract things, these abstract integrals, the blocks and the rods, and very quickly got past sort of concrete analogies. You know, I mean, if you want to, you can build a little rectangle out of blocks and rods and say, oh, that's a door, I'm going to go through the door, you know. But after a while, it becomes an opening. And then it becomes a way of journeying from one volume to another. And then when I find myself reinforcing the differences between one volume and the other, separated by the aperture, right? You notice my language is getting more and more abstract all the time. Then that's another thing, reinforcing the differences in everything, in the things you see, the textures and the shapes and the volumes, and the things that you smell, and the things you hear, and the ideas that you come into contact with. All the time you're looking for similarities, but you're also pulling the things apart and setting them, feeling their juxtaposition, feeling the things which give each one its own particular identity and being. Until now, they are extremely special things to me.
Yeah.
Because of that. They don't mean anything particular.
Yeah.
They've just been enfolded in this concentration process that they've just got a halo of specialness around them.
By being put where you put them, and by being
Yes, that's right. And by reaching over and taking that rod and taking it out of that hole and shifting it around and putting it into that other hole and feeling a tremendous, a huge sort of emotional wrench inside my, underneath my belly button when I did it. Now that's a direct, a visceral reaction to my imagination. And I think, I like that. I have a feeling that it is a good thing. And that it's making me, allows me to function deeper.
It enables you to invest what are abstract ideas with emotional weight for yourself.
That's right. Personally. That's right. Yes, to invest with a highly personalized, individualized significance. Things which otherwise don't have any significance at all. Of course, once you start doing that, you realize that this applies to everything. That's exactly what you do all the time. To everything. And as soon as you make that realization, and I'm not saying when you make that realization in the way I've described, when you make the gut realization of that, that's when you start to become aware of your whole transitory kind of characteristic, the whole way in which you're mentally setting yourself up or knocking yourself down.
There's, is that a, what do you call that? View of abstract things, a remove? Are you more removed?
No.
It's more into?
Yeah.
But it's a highly personalised thing, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I think it hinges upon the concept that one's existence generally is individualised. And all of the things that I've said previously say that.
Yeah. How does your family bear on your trade and these sort of activities?
I don't think they bear on these sorts of activities and thoughts in the same way as all other stimuli do. But they are extremely personalised stimuli, and so obviously that they're going to be very, very strongly indeed. Extremely. I mean, my attitude, especially towards the kids, is it really frightens me. I think it probably frightens most parents. You know, just how completely out of control they are in their attitude towards their children. Just, you know. But
what do you mean by out of control?
Well, I just mean that there is an emotional commitment, realization of something that is completely beyond the child. It's a product of the circumstances of the child and the father, in my case, and immediately one is on one's guard at getting the two mixed up. You know?
What's the cube mean for you? The cube means...
Well, the cube means a volume encompassed by boundaries. In the case of the cube, rectangular boundaries, which allow me to focus my concentration on the volume inside, as against the infinite volume outside, an enclosed volume inside the cube, and an infinite volume outside. That's its function, the main function that I can describe. An inside and outsideness.
So it's like, it's more a state than a place.
Yes, that's right. It's a state. Yes, that's a good description.
Mm.
Of course, one doesn't really need the frame. It's a help. One can establish one's cubes wherever one likes, and they don't have to be cubes, you know.
The mind boggles.
Yeah, the mind does boggle. And of course, mind boggles quite frequently, all the time. although not as much as I would think, and I get sometimes extremely disappointed in myself that I find that, generally speaking, I'm in the sort of state that I always have been in.
Mm.
But every now and then, I find that I've just been completely catapulted into the other state. Where... I start investing all these things with my own. I give them all a new state relative to me.
If your interest is primarily in the sort of differences that come when you're able to invest the things around you with special significance for you personally,
mm-hmm.
and your interest is in examining the differences and the similarities between things, why impose formalized structures like blocks and rods and other sorts of boundaries like cubes and or any boundary for that matter on them?
Yeah, well, the reason is that that's what I started with, the blocks and rods, probably for quite pragmatic reasons. But it's not necessarily what I'm going to finish up with, obviously. I think the boundaries, especially the rectangular boundaries, allow me to... They're fairly simple, and they allow me to concentrate on simple juxtapositions which can feed me at full strength. As soon as I clutter my buildings with too many blocks and rods, they're no good. They just become blocks and rods. I've got to take things out. It will suddenly click, there it is, you know?
Mm.
But I think in the end, you know, it won't be necessary to do very much.